ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. My guest today is David Schreiner-Kahn, a speaker, consultant, and host of the podcast Smashing the Plateau, produced by 10 Strategic Partners, the consulting company he founded. Featured in Inc., David is dedicated to helping business leaders remove the roadblocks that are keeping them from fully achieving their goals. David, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure, Gabriella.
So you're the president of 10 Strategic Partners, and your company empowers organizations to become the recognized go-to resource in their niche. Can you tell me more about 10 and also the methodologies you use?
Sure. So one of the things that I see that's going on, and it's probably been going on for some time, this is nothing new, is that people kind of get, especially when they've been in a field for a while, they kind of get into almost a rut where they get stuck, kind of, they feel pigeonholed. Very often, the pigeonholing is sort of self-directed. You know, it's like if you've, you know, you've been a marketing consultant for 20 years and you've been doing the same kind of work and things are not changing, or you're in corporate and you've been in the same kind of role, you know, let's say you're middle management and you've been doing it for a while. Things often don't change that quickly, particularly when you've been doing things for a while, yet what's happening around us is changing and we need to address that. And if we don't address it proactively, eventually it's going to bite us in the you know what.
Right.
So what I like to do is, in particular, for people that have a lot of experience, is take a step away from the day-to-day. And what you really need to do is look at your kind of your big vision. Look at what does success look like to you. And the way I like to describe success is that it's not an absolute, it's a scale. We can be more successful, we can be less successful. And the progression of success over time is not a linear progression. It happens sort of in fits and starts. Mm-hmm. So you really need to kind of understand what does, and it's very personal, what does it mean to you? And yes, you can be part of a big organization. You can be a solopreneur. Wherever you fit in the working landscape, the answer to this question is really, first it starts with very personal. What does it mean to you? And then how do you make that work in your environment, whether you're in corporate, you're in a small company, you're working on your own, whatever it is, you've got to make it work for you and in your environment. That's where everything starts. So from there, you can understand where you're best served to provide value to the people you serve, which then gets into how do you figure out exactly what your niche is. And then the next step is, okay, so if I understand sort of what I'm all about, what I want to create, what game I'm playing, what success looks like to me, how I would measure success, what my goals are for my life, for my business, and then how do I get known for what I do? Because it's not about, one of my early podcast guests said it very well, which is particularly in today's world, it's not so much about you getting known, it's really about who knows you. So if you figure out who your niche is, you need to be known for that. And it's, you and I were talking a little bit before we started recording this episode, and it's interesting that we're in the media business, and it's not about shouting the loudest or having the most clever advertising. There are, particularly in our knowledge economy, there are better ways to get known. So things like what you and I are doing, which is hosting podcasts.
Right.
It's a great way to do a deep dive on a consistent basis about your specialty.
Right.
Over time, people start to know that that's what you stand for.
Right. Is your approach different if you're an individual in a large business versus if you are an owner of a smaller agency, or if you're a solopreneur. I mean, those are sort of three very different environments. Would your approach be different, or is your approach really centered on the individual and therefore not very different?
My approach is the same for everybody, which is I ask very targeted questions of the people that need to make the decision about what they need to change. Because people who come to me, and I suspect it's probably the same for you, they're looking for some kind of transformation from the current situation.
Right.
Whatever that transformation is. So the first thing I will ask is, okay, what does success look like to you? Let's do a deep dive. What does that mean? Where have you been successful in the past? What works really well for you? You know, it's interesting in the performance review space in the corporate world, my experience, particularly early on in my career, and this is, you know, going back a couple of decades, is that there's a lot of focus on what you're weak at.
Right.
And right, when I work with people, it's about what is it you're really good at? Forget about what you're weak at. We want you to do more of what you're really good at so you can have better impact on your marketplace and the people you're serving. Again, it doesn't matter whether you're in an organization as an employee or whether you're self-employed or entrepreneur. It's still the same. You got to know what you're best at and figure out how to capitalize on that better than you're doing now.
Right. So your website says the 10 system will help businesses build and sustain excellence. What is the 10 system?
So the system is, it has several very basic steps, which are understand what success is, understand how you would measure how successful you are, come up with a relatively simple action plan, because the kinds of plans that I spent too much time involved in earlier on in my career, like big strategic plans and business plans, they're out of date by the time the ink is dry,
mm-hmm.
or nowadays the digital ink, they end up sitting on a shelf. So what I like to see is how do we create something that's a very achievable plan that's really simple, that maybe has one major thing that you're working on at a time,
mm-hmm.
so you can really focus on it, and then understand what it is we need to measure to know how well we're doing on executing that plan. So we could take a first step, look at the results, and then learn from those results, make a small pivot for the next step. Because when you think about business breakthroughs, a breakthrough is when somebody else notices that there's been a big transformation.
Mm-hmm.
Those breakthroughs always happen after hundreds or thousands of tiny steps. So the process is really about how do we create a plan that is as achievable as possible, have basic metrics in place, because what gets measured gets done.
Right.
And make sure that there is a time and a place to look at those metrics and learn from them consistently. So if you are, for example, trying to move into a new marketplace, what do you need to know about that marketplace? How do you do the research? If you're trying to launch a new offering, how do you know how well that offering is doing? And at what point do you need to make some changes in the offering?
Right. Well, for some of these things, I see sort of the questions that are lined up. Not everybody has the skill set to answer these questions. I mean, obviously, if they're working directly on one with you, you're there to guide them. But if I'm a small business owner and or I'm somebody who has, you know, the world has passed me by and I have been shed from my corporate job and I am now a solopreneur and I'm trying to define success in this environment where I've never been a solopreneur before, do you also offer other sort of more like group consulting or do you help people build skills in other ways other than very specific consulting with them?
Yes, we, as a matter of fact, we do group work. I'm a strong believer in group work. I think it's really important because what happens when you're in a group is there's some learning that happens, particularly if there's a curriculum or methodology behind what the group is working on, then you're obviously going to be absorbing some of that. There is also a lot of support that comes from peers.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about it, if you're, let's say you are a business owner of a small company, if you're in a group of 10 or 20 other business owners that are, in particular, those that are not direct competitors with you.
Right, sort of a safe space where you can talk about things.
Exactly, a safe space. And then in particular, and this is one of the keys to this kind of group working well, if the peers are sharing experiences rather than giving advice, it's a non-judgmental way for us to learn from our peers.
Right.
And in fact, it's also a great way to have some ideas for innovation, because something that works for a totally different kind of company in a different industry might be a great thing for me to test in my business.
That's actually always been something that's part of the one of the drivers behind this podcast is talking to people in different industries that might have a bearing on entertainment, because sometimes something is a best practice, very well known, very familiar, is used outside of our industry, but isn't used inside of our industry. And it absolutely has application. There are, you know, structures for hairdressers in beauty salons that could work in editorial companies, for instance, for compensation structures. I mean, it's just interesting that you can apply things across industries that you wouldn't necessarily think would have anything to do with one another.
Right. So as an example, one of the areas that I'm now doing work with my community is about creating recurring revenue. And if you look at subscription businesses, like a magazine or Netflix, and think about, well, how can a small service business apply some of the same principles and offer something on a subscription basis so that there's consistent revenue? And particularly, one of the beauties of a subscription business is you get paid up front, right? You send a check or give your credit card to the magazine, and they get your income generally a few weeks before you even get the first issue.
Right.
And then they have that income to produce issues for a whole year.
Right.
So what can you do as a service business so you can offer something where you get paid up front and then you can deliver the service on an ongoing basis?
Right. And add that value. One of the things that seems to be very present is the concept of smashing the plateau in business. In your experience, why do successful businesses and business leaders hit plateaus? Is it simply that they hit a comfort zone? What is it?
Generally, it's one of two things. Either it's the comfort zone that's attached to mindset. So one really classic one is small business is successful. They're great at what they sell. There's a market for what they sell. The business owner is working really hard. Business owner can't handle it all himself or herself. Hires a handful of people. At some point, the business owner is delivering service or product and supervising, you know, maybe half a dozen to a dozen people. And that person is really stretched thin, and also selling, right? The person is stretched really thin. The business gets to a point where what they really need is a management layer. And if you've never hired managers before, it can be really daunting, because what it essentially means is, as the business owner, I'm now giving up the authority that I had, because I was supervising, let's say I'm supervising 10 people and I can't really handle it anymore. I need to hire a new person who's going to start supervising those 10 people. And giving up that authority and that control is usually a really scary thing.
Right, right.
That's one example. Another one could be tactical. So there are businesses that worked really well selling without the internet. And nowadays, the first place people go to do business is the internet. Well, how do you kind of get onto the digital bandwagon if you've never done it before? There could be a steep learning curve.
Right.
If you've never done any kind of content creation or content marketing, that could be pretty daunting. I mean, I can talk about it personally because I started content marketing about 5 years ago. I didn't have a blog before that, didn't have a podcast. It's like, you got to start somewhere. Then the first one, like people in this space say, if you're not embarrassed by the first episode, you waited too long.
Very true. I think we all have the, oh, don't look at episode 1 through 5. where I'm exactly. learning how to do it all, and those kind guests who put up with me.
Right. So there's a learning curve to that. There's a tactical piece. So that's another aspect of where people get stuck.
Right. Why does it feel so hard? I mean, it seems like these are all steps. That's all very logical, but it really does feel just, like Sisyphus pushing that boulder up the steep hill. And why does it feel that way when, ultimately if you're hiring these managers, your life should be getting easier. Why is it so hard?
Because the further up the ladder you go, whether you're in corporate and you're becoming a manager or particularly C-suite, the parallel actually to C-suite and corporate in terms of mindset is really similar to a business owner that has a very small team or no team. And the issue there is loneliness, because we're the only ones making the kinds of decisions we're making, and who do we have to talk to about it?
Right.
Nobody.
Right. Right.
We can't talk to our employees about it because we don't want them to know that there's some fear involved in the decisions we're making. We're not going to talk to our vendors or our competitors about it. If we have investors, we're not going to share a lot of these things with our investors.
Right? I'm so nervous.
Right, exactly. If we have a spouse or significant other, very often they don't even want to hear this kind of stuff. They don't want to hear that you're afraid that your business you've been running for 10 years is about to tank. They want to know that they're going to be able to live a comfortable lifestyle for as long as possible. So who do you talk to about these things? That's why it's so hard, I think. And then we agonize over decisions that should be relatively simple.
Right. Right. Well, I think there too. Then again, it's the same business about finding that safe group of other people who aren't competitors so that you can have colleagues, I guess. And that it's interesting, the parallels between the small business owner with a small team and a C-suite executive at a large organization. Yeah, who do they talk to, where anybody could be a leak and it could affect stock price? It's interesting. What are some of the tools that people can access that you had mentioned before we started talking about an MBA course?
Yeah, so one of the ways that we work is by collaborating with other like-minded entrepreneurs that are also helping. Our space is mostly the small business space, so we help small business owners that get stuck in these kinds of situations that we just discussed. So I'm co-hosting a conference in April in St. Louis called 3-Day MBA, which is designed for small business owners that have been successful and are really trying to grow or trying to scale. And we've created a 3-day program, kind of soup to nuts, everything you need to know about business today, particularly small business. So you can spend 3 days away from the day-to-day and be with these kinds of colleagues that we've just talked about in a safe space, so you can get some great ideas about how you can smash the plateau for where you are and really grow the business that you've been nurturing and building up until now.
What would you say? I mean, because if people have been running a successful business, what is this special skill set that they might be missing that will help unlock success for them?
Well, it's probably different for each person, which is why we're covering a plethora of topics, from mindset to marketing to sales to systems to communication. Communication is a huge issue in today's world. There's so many devices, people communicate less effectively than ever before. Huh. So we're covering a whole range of topics. There are a lot of people that have specialty in various kinds of what goes on in the digital marketplace, mm-hmm. which is, as I said, where a lot of new business is happening.
Right.
And it's great to be able to actually do this in person as opposed to doing it online.
Right.
Because there's nothing quite like being in person with the speakers, the teachers, being in an interactive place with peers where you can do this and we're building in enough networking time so people can talk about what they're learning. So it's going to be a great event.
You mentioned mindset. And you also mentioned communication. I just want to dive a little bit deeper into those two topics. So mindset, in your experience, what kind of mindset do you find is the most successful? That if you're, once they've sort of wrapped their way around, you know, this particular way of being, that it tends to move forward smoothly. What is that mindset?
Recognizing that we have fear and having tools to be able to work through your fear.
So not denying the fear, not ignoring the fear.
No, the fear's there. Let's be real. Fear is a big driver in business decisions.
Yeah. Right. It's true. And people are never afraid, supposedly. So that's interesting.
Right. So like in the big corporate space, it's like, well, I hired the best known, most expensive consultant for this project. Don't blame me that it didn't work.
Right. Right. The blame proof hires. It's interesting how that goes.
Nobody wants to make a decision because they don't want to get blamed.
Right.
Which really does not help businesses progress.
Well, no. And that goes to culture though, isn't it? That was one of the interesting conversations I had with a gentleman from the Army about allowing failure, failing fast, and really allowing it, that it's okay, that you can make mistakes because you have to make mistakes. You're going to make mistakes.
But here's the thing about making mistakes and learning from your failures. I find that a lot of business owners recognize that they're going to make mistakes. They're still fearful about the mistakes. Don't get me wrong. But they recognize that mistakes will happen. Mm. And they try not to blame themselves too much and try to learn from them. The key is, can they apply the same rules to their employees?
Right.
So that their employees aren't afraid to speak up when they notice something.
Right.
Because as a business owner, what you really want is you want your employees to tell you when they think there's a problem, including if they think they're the ones that caused the problem.
Right.
And learning from a failure means that I have taken steps so that I won't repeat the same mistake.
Right.
If somebody is repeating the same kind of mistake over and over again, it's a different issue. Then you have a competence issue. But somebody who's competent and who's intelligent, who recognizes that he or she did something that caused the company to lose money, to spend more time on something, or to lose opportunity to make money, and realizes that there's a way to avoid it in the future, that's a great learning opportunity. But you need to be able to support that as the business owner.
Right.
That's really important.
Right. Absolutely. And that actually ties in a bit to communication and ability to communicate effectively with all these new devices and with all these things. What would you say is the number one challenge in communication that you're seeing these days?
People don't do it. They send a text when they should be writing an email. They send an email when they should be making a phone call. And they make a phone call when they should take the time to meet with somebody in person.
Oh, that's interesting. So what you're really seeing is sort of a remove. That seems like a chain of removal. And I notice that with younger people, that I'll say, could you call this person? And then I'll later check in and say, oh, what did they say? And they said, oh, I sent them an email. And I was like, well, why don't you just pick up the phone, call and get it done? Do you think there's an age-related thing there? Or is it just across the board you're seeing this?
Yeah, it's somewhat age-related. It's not exclusively age-related, but it is somewhat. I can't tell you how many times I've had a conversation with a client. A client says, vendor or consultant or employee didn't meet my expectations. They screwed up. I said, okay, well, how did they screw up and how did they know what you wanted them to do? Mm-hmm. Well, I told them. I'm like, okay, how did you tell them? Sent them a text.
Oh. Right. Yeah.
Not good enough.
No. You know,
there's an old management style called management by walking around.
Right.
Right? There's a great power in actually physically walking around and listening.
Right.
Now, not in today's world, a lot of people are not physically contiguous, so you can't always do that. But when you can do it, people just don't do it enough.
Right. Right.
And when you can't, by the way, when you can't do it and you're physically not present, then think about how do you create the opportunities so that you can hear the things that you would have heard if you'd walked around. And if the times when you are physically close together, is less than it might have been a couple of decades ago, the times that you are together, instead of packing an agenda, like let's say your company is very spread out and everybody in the department gets together once a quarter in person, rather than packing the day from early morning till late at night with meetings, build in some space to interact casually, because it's really important.
Right. Well, people, it's interesting that what we see with the social media trends are that people are extreme and they're tribal and they don't necessarily listen and they communicate in ways that they wouldn't necessarily communicate if they were in person. And it's creating almost, I know with very young people, we see a trend where their ability to relate to one another in person is difficult. They have a difficult time with it, with actually talking, you know, because they're very facile in text or Snapchat, but they can't talk to the person. Because if they're actually with the person, you have to deal with the consequences of if you've hurt their feelings. You actually have to have a genuine response. You can't craft your response. You can't be the very best, most witty version of yourself. You just have to be who you are. I think it's interesting that that's...
Yeah, and Gabrielle, you actually just touched on something when you mentioned the word feelings. So text does not capture emotions.
No. Well, yeah, and how sophisticated people are at reading emotions from facial expressions, from body language, and that we've removed all that. But at least in a telephone call, you can hear tone of voice, you know,
yes.
You can hear pauses, and you're and in person, it's far better, of course, as well. We've gotten off track a little bit. Your podcast, Smashing the Plateau, you've interviewed over 250 business leaders, including very many famous people. Gary Vaynerchuk, who's, you know, one of my employees, just worships at his, you know, everything he says. Tell me about more about your show and how you get these guests to come on and what the most interesting thing you've learned from all of these guests. What's the one thing that stands out?
Well, the one thing that stands out, so I guess I'll answer these questions in reverse. The one thing that stands out is we all put our pants on the same way. And I've worked with a lot of well-known and high-powered people in my life, and everybody has fears.
Right.
So we're all pretty much put together the same way. We may have different experiences. We may have different skill sets. Some of us have huge followings. Some of us have no following, but we're all pretty much the same. So that's one. What I've learned from guests is everybody has fears. Most people, particularly people I've had on my show, are probably the hardest on themselves more than anybody else is. Everybody has aspirations and ambitions, particularly people in leadership roles generally have a lot more that they want to do than they're able to actually accomplish, which is terrific. It's what keeps life interesting. What I would say to anybody who's thinking about doing what you and I are doing, Gabriella, is just start, figure out what your message is and what your niche is, and start with who you know for guests. If you're thinking about a podcast as an example, same thing is true with a blog. If you're getting guest posts, etc., think about who you know. And it's like any other kind of system for building relationships, it will spread out. And if you do a good job, other people will be referred to you and other people will hear about you and they will want to interact with you.
Right, right. That's wonderful. One last question that I've been asking people is, what do you think is in the future of media and how are you preparing for it?
Well, one of the things that I've seen is the importance of having a really clear message. And in particular, I think the better somebody in the media world can do at identifying a clear-cut niche that is needed by listeners, viewers, some kind of audience, the better. It's easier. It becomes easier and easier and easier to produce content. You don't really want to compete with other people that are producing the same content. That doesn't really help you and it doesn't really help an audience. So it's like, what isn't being produced and how can you produce that? And also, how can you produce it relatively easily and without huge expense.
Right.
And who do you really desire to serve, and what do they need?
Right.
If you think about, there are many media platforms, or I'm not sure what the right term is, but a media presence that's been created because an audience really wanted something, and somebody came in and filled that void and spoke to them.
Right.
So the actual, I would say, don't get hung up on the actual channel or the methodology or the bells and whistles. This is, again, it goes back to communication. Media is about communication. What is it that people want, and how can you provide it? And this is really about understanding who your audience is, what they want to receive, and how you can help them as a media provider. How can you help them make some kind of transformation in their lives and make some kind of improvement?
Right. Well, we've come to the end of our episode, but before we go, how can people find you and find out more about you?
So the easiest way is to go to our podcast site, smashingtheplateau.com, that actually links to all of our material. There are links to get in touch with me if anybody wants to. They can also check out the 3-day MBA that I mentioned, which is the number 3MBA.net. You can connect with me on LinkedIn, on Twitter, Facebook. We have a new Facebook group for Smashing the Plateau. People are welcome to join that. And for anybody that actually wants to use the old-fashioned method that you and I talked about, the telephone, 212-731-0770. Phone gets answered 40 hours a week, business hours, Eastern time.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us. I think it's really interesting, and I think it's important for all of us today as we encounter this new world that we're in to think about how we can continue changing and breaking through the plateaus that we reach. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Gabriella. Great to be on.
We've reached the end of another episode of Up Next, and I'd like to close by thanking a few important people who've helped bring the program to life. First, my friend, Rob Naughton, the amazing voice artist who recorded our open. And of course, thanks to my production team over at Microfame Media, and a big thank you to our guest, David Schreiner Kahn. And of course, most importantly, all of you, the members of our amazing audience, thank you. I'll be talking to you again next week, right here on Up Next.